Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Thursday, September 7th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigeria's appeals court upholds President Bola Tinubu's election.
Our judges have been able to legitimize illegitimacy using the Constitution of the Federal Republic of Nigeria as a cover-up.
The mandate of the East African Community Forces in the DRC is extended. Civil society calls for peace in Ethiopia. Eswatini marks its 55th independence anniversary, along with the king's 55th birthday. The Africa Climate Summit ends with a call to reform global financing.
The Africa Climate Summit is both a demonstration of the unwavering collective commitment of the people of Africa to their vision to make humanity's first home here in Africa.
And Liberia schools reopen ahead of October elections. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nigeria's Presidential Election Petition Tribunal has upheld the election of President Bola Tinubu by rejecting two petitions brought by Atiku Abubakar, the presidential candidate of the People's Democratic Party, the PDP, and Peter Obi of the Labour Party in the February 25 elections. In its ruling on Wednesday, the court rejected Abubakar's allegations of nationwide overvoting because he failed to specify the locations where the incidents took place. Earlier Wednesday, the court, in its preliminary ruling, dismissed Peter Obi's claim of overvoting in 18,088 polling stations because he failed to name the locations of the polling areas. Yanusia Tanko is the Labour Party spokesperson. He tells me the court's ruling is a silent portion for Nigerian democracy.
Our judges have been able to legitimize illegitimacy using the Constitution of the Federal Republic of Nigeria as a cover-up. And I say this with all level of humility and patriotism. The judges told us that they are going to deal with the matter. They are going to look at the substance of the matter, not the technicalities. But what we just saw this morning, throughout this evening, is our judges not using technicalities to knock out most of our genuine grievances. Unfortunately, these judges, we expect, are those who have witnessed the election by themselves and have not seen the level of decay in the process, should have looked at the substance of the matter, not the technicalities. Interestingly, they also singled out the lawyers of the Labour Party as a form of ridicule, calling their names and saying that our witnesses lack competency. And I find that very difficult to believe, because I was the star witness, and I know for sure that what I saw or what I witnessed was a fact. And coming with our pedigree, we cannot be adjourned to be a kind of an uninformed witness. So whatever it is that have made them to take this position is now left for time to decide. We, possibly after this, our principal may speak to the nation to tell us the new direction in which we intend to go.
That's exactly what I wanted to ask you then. So what's next? Is this the end of your petition?
We will wait a bit after they finish, maybe possibly by tomorrow. We will have a clear directive from our principal who will speak on what next he will do. Of course, the party is not happy with this particular judgment, as it were. But we'll put our heads together to kind of look at the judgment and give our informed position on the matter.
What does this mean, before I let you go, about democracy in Nigeria?
It's been given a silent poison, and it's been killed gradually. Because it is simply saying that if you have no qualification, you can run for election. It is simply saying that if you have thugs, you can use them to manipulate the system. It's simply saying that if you have money, you can bribe the electoral umpire, and at the end of it all, bribe the media so that they can seek sympathy from the people.
Thank you so much again for your time to speak with us.
God bless you, James. Thank you.
Yunusa Tanko is the spokesperson for the Labour Party of Nigeria. He was speaking with us from the capital, Abuja. The first Africa Climate Summit has ended in Kenya, with leaders calling on the global community to act urgently to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, fulfill its obligations, and keep financial promises to fight climate change, Mohammed Yusuf reports.
Speaking on behalf of the other African heads of state present at the Africa Climate Summit, Kenyan President William Ruto said the agreement reached at the conference shows the seriousness of African states to help solve the climate change crisis.
The Africa Climate Summit is both a demonstration of the unwavering collective commitment of the people of Africa to their vision to make humanity's first home here in Africa, a land of abundant potential, limitless opportunity, and the possibility of shared prosperity. It is also showcases our determination to mobilize a global coalition of emergency responders to ensure that the industrialization necessary to drive future economic transformation restores our planet's vitality and ecological balance.
The summit, which began Monday and ended Wednesday, focused on green growth in Africa and finding financing solutions to support the programs aimed at mitigating the effects of climate change, which affects the continent's estimated 1.3 billion people. African leaders underscored they are committed to developing and implementing policies, regulations and incentives to attract local, regional and global investment in the push for green growth. The Nairobi Declaration, leaders said, it will serve as the foundation for Africa's united position in the global climate change initiative. Kenyan youth leader Raphael Chisori says leaders and delegates at the summit demonstrated their willingness to fight climate change.
What I've witnessed is a demonstrated effort by the heads of states in Africa and, of course, with the global partners on how they can really have grassroots initiatives in the fight against climate change. And there were also commitments in terms of climate financing, concessionary financing. And what also came out is that the non-state actors are also willing to partner with the governments to see that there is participation of the people at the grassroots level.
Andrew Monari, a community worker in Kenya, said he learned how vulnerable communities can access the Climate Change Fund to support their mitigation programs.
I have attended the site meetings in terms of climate change finance. For example, we have concluded one in Noteli today, where vulnerable people and minority peoples who are affected by climate change has been discussed in terms of financing.
According to the United Nations, African countries spend 5% to 15% of its GDP to combat climate change, despite being the lowest contributor to global warming. Developed countries have promised to give at least $100 billion annually to fight the impacts of climate change, a fund many say has been hard to come by. At the summit, UN Chief Antonio Guterres said an additional $20 billion is needed to help mitigate Africa's unpredictable weather patterns. President Ruto said Africa needs access to global finances to support communities and pay its debt.
We demand a fair playing ground for our countries to access the investment needed to unlock the potential and translate it into opportunities. We further demand a just multilateral development finance architecture to liberate our economies from odious debt and onerous barriers to necessary financial resources.
African leaders emphasize that for the continent to undergo economic transformation, it needs to increase renewable generation capacity. Mohammed Isu for VOA News, Nairobi.
The mandate of the East African Force in the Democratic Republic of Congo has been extended until December. The announcement came as regional leaders met in Nairobi to assess the status of security in the DRC. Moses Habyarimana reports.
During the 22nd Extraordinary Summit of the East African Community Heads of State that took place on Tuesday in Nairobi, the leaders of the East African Community countries indicated that the mandate of the regional forces needs to be extended to restore peace and stability in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. Dr. Peter Matuki is the Secretary General of the East African Community.
The summit noted that the current mandate of the regional force will be expiring on 8 September 2023. Therefore, the heads of state agreed to extend duration of the mandate of the East African Community Regional Force and the Status of Forces Agreement for a further period of 3 months.
The extension of the mandate comes at a time when more than 40 people were killed last week in anti-UN protests in the eastern city of Goma that demanded the withdrawal of UN and regional peacekeepers. The bandy protesters accused MONUSCO peacekeepers of failing to protect civilians against decades of attacks by rebel groups in the eastern part of the country. Fred Mukasambide is an EAC integration expert and vice president of the Democratic Party in Uganda.
The extension of the Status of Forces Agreement and generally the stay of the standard force in the EAC, the president of the DRC needs to accompany such presence of forces with the necessary goodwill to perform the objects for which they were placed there. The disadvantage that may exist is where President Tshisekedi begins to think that the forces are there for purposes of fighting the M23, because then that would have created a dichotomy between his own population.
The deployment of the regional forces met with mixed reactions by the citizens and the government of the Democratic Republic of Congo, as President Felix Tshisekedi early this year openly criticized the regional forces of not executing their mandate. The move led to the resignation of Regional Force Commander General Jeff Nyanga from duty after being criticized by Kinshasa for failing to rein the M23 group behind the attacks in the eastern DRC. When reached, DRC's communication minister and government spokesperson Patrick Muyaya said he was not able to comment on the renewal of the East African Forces mandate. The EAC chairman of the Heads of State Summit, President Evariste Ndayishimiye, last month visited Kinshasa and signed a bilateral defense pact with President Felix Tshisekedi. During his visit, President Evariste Ndayishimiye said that the mission of the regional force is to return peace to the DRC while fighting against the foreign forces. According to the UN, violence in Congo has caused one of the world's worst and longest-running humanitarian emergencies, with more than 27 million people facing food shortages and nearly 5.5 million forced to flee their homes. For Voice of America, I'm Moses Havyarimana.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Thursday, September 7th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Civil society organizations in Ethiopia have put out a call for a peaceful resolution to conflicts in the country that have caused thousands of deaths over the past 12 months. Maya Misika reports from Addis Ababa.
Civil society organizations in Ethiopia on Wednesday called for a peaceful resolution to conflicts in the country days before the Ethiopian New Year, which falls on September 12. Dan Yirga, executive director at the Ethiopian Human Rights Council, said this request is to all stakeholders in the country's peace-building process. He said that most of the conflicts were started or aggravated because of a long-standing culture of using force to settle tensions. To create a lasting solution for this problem, a nationwide peace convention that is inclusive of all members of the society needs to be prepared to create a roadmap to avoid, solve, and do peace-building in long, medium, and short-term conflicts. The call by the organizations highlighted the many conflicts that took place over the past year in the country, as well as encouraging steps toward peace-building. Over 1,000 political conflicts have been reported over the past 12 months, according to data from the Ethiopian Peace Observatory, a local data collection project run by the U.S.-based Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project. Meserat Ali from the Association for Human Rights in Ethiopia talked about the impact of conflicts across the country. She said that because of conflicts and fighting, a lot of people have been displaced from their homes. Civilians have died. Women and children have been raped. In the Benishangul-Gumuz region, the 6th national elections were not held there, and another year has passed again. Armed opposition in the country's Oromia and Amhara regions, referendums held for the creation of new regional states, and protests over a schism in the Ethiopian Orthodox Tewahedo Church are some of the conflicts that took place. The organizations also addressed the government's common response to these conflicts, such as partial and full internet shutdowns, widespread and unlawful arrests, and limiting the rights and freedoms of citizens. In April, Ethiopian government officials attended peace talks in Tanzania with members of the Oromo Liberation Army, a rebel faction. The talks ended with no agreement reached. Maya Misikir, VOA News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
Eswatini yesterday, Wednesday, celebrated both the 55th anniversary of its independence and the 55th birthday of King Mswati III. No current head of state of the regional group, Southern African Development Community, SADC, attended the occasion. Taiwanese President Tsai Ing-wen was in attendance, along with several former presidents of SADC countries. The opposition People's United Democratic Movement, PUDEMO, said there is nothing to celebrate except 55 years of royal oppression. Government spokesperson Alpheus Dumalo tells me that Eswatini is rising from the ashes of colonial economic exploitation and political manipulation.
It was a very wonderful and precious day. Maswati all converged at the National Stadium at Somhlolo. That's where we hosted a number of former presidents. For instance, we have the former president of the Republic of South Africa, President Jacob Zuma. We had the former president of Botswana, His Excellency Seretse Khama. And we have the incumbent president of the Republic of China, Taiwan. And we had a number of kings that were also coming from our neighboring states, the Republic of South Africa and Mozambique. It was a wonderful day.
In terms of advancement of your country at this Independence Day, how would you describe where your country came from and where it is now?
Our country, like the rest of African countries who were subjected to a period of colonialism at some point, we are rising from the ashes of exploitation economically. We are rising from the ashes of political manipulation. And the Kingdom of Eswatini gained its independence from Britain in 1968 with almost absolutely zero development in all areas of its statehood. Today, we are boasting of a first world-class infrastructure in terms of road. We have attained so much in terms of education. Maswati are well-educated. Economically, we are performing very well. We are a peaceful country.
What do you say to some of those Eswatini citizens who say that this Independence Day, there's nothing to celebrate because they talk about the 55 years of royal oppression, there's no medicine in the country, people are being arrested and people are in exile? What is your response?
Look at those people who are saying that or advancing that narrative. Take a second look or a third look at them before you ask them a question. They are educated. They are having degrees. They are working in those countries which they have chosen to go to in diaspora, which they decided to call it exile. They were all educated in this country. Their education were paid by the same system, by the same government, by the same state which attained independence in 1968. Look at them again. Take a look before you ask them a question. If you are not convinced at looking at them, ask them a question. How were you educated in a country which you describe it in the manner in which you are describing? Finally, we are calling upon those people who are calling themselves exiles. They've got no right to be in exile. This is a country of their father and motherland. We are inviting them. Let them come home. Let them come and work for their country and work for the future of the Kingdom of Eswatini.
Alpheus Malo is the Eswatini government spokesperson. He was speaking with me from the capital, Mbabane. Students in Liberia have begun the new academic year with complaints and constraints as the country is prepared for elections on October 10. Denise Nipson has more from Monrovia.
The 2023-2024 academic year began on Monday, September 4th, with a temporary break on October 6th due to the October 10th general elections. Incumbent President George Weah is seeking a second 6-year term and made complains of economic hardship across the country. He is being challenged by three other candidates, including the former ruling Unity Party. There has been an escalation of campaign violence between the ruling Coalition for Democratic Change and the main opposition Unity Party. VOA samples a few schools in the central and southeastern regions of the country about their preparedness for the school year. Josiah Colley is the principal of John Flomo Bakalu Senior High School in Bourke County, Central Liberia.
The Ministry of Education ordered us to open school on the 4th of September, but unfortunately, we are not seeing our students coming the way we expect them. And registration is still slow. The perception we are getting from the parents, one is attributed to the economy. They have a challenge in economy. And two, they also have this fear of the election, the Ottawa 10 election that is pending.
Greg Collins, principal of Sodikin Central High School, a public school in Maryland County, says his facility has other challenges in addition to low enrollment.
The school has had series of constraints over the years. There have been series of constraints. Like, for example, one of the major constraints we are faced with for now is the seating capacity. The school lacks seating capacity. Almost every day when we come to school, we find our students fighting over armchairs, we find students fighting over desks.
In Grenku, southeast of Liberia, the principal of P.G. Wallo High School, Sylvester Nuwan, says while enrollment at his school has been impressive, there are numerous problems.
With the issue of challenges, I will not be able to count all of them. But basically right now, the school has been a high school for over years, but the school does not have a science laboratory. There are some of our instructors who are yet volunteering. We find it difficult in actually compensating them. But sometimes we compensate them based on a negotiation with the community members when we get a team involved. You know, the community involvement can empower us to sometimes have some revenue to give them in sometimes a month time, which of course is less than what they're supposed to receive, but they are categories. Some are bachelor degree holders.
According to World Bank data, as of 2020, 50% of Liberia's loss of human capital was due to poor education. For VOA's Daybreak Africa, I'm Denise Nefsin in Monrovia, Liberia.
U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, announced Wednesday nearly $163 million in additional humanitarian assistance for the people of Sudan and neighboring countries during her visit to Chad. According to a press release by the U.S. State Department, the assistance includes nearly $103 million provided through the Department of State's Bureau of Population, Refugees and Migration, and nearly $60 million through the United States Agency for International Development Bureau for humanitarian assistance. This brings total U.S. humanitarian assistance for Sudan emergency response to nearly $710 million in fiscal year 2023. And that's it for this Thursday, September 7th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for being our guest this morning. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barton in Washington saying, have a great day and please be safe whatever you do.
Niger, Burkina Faso, Guinea-Bissau, Chad, Mali, and just a few days ago, Gabon. These countries have all experienced military coups. On this week's episode of Our Voices, we ask the questions, what are women's voices on the matter? And what do they propose as the best way forward? Join the conversation on Wednesday.